Alrighty, guys, welcome back to another episode of the show. Another day, another guest today. And today, man, I promise you guys, this guest is like anything, unlike anything we've ever had before, because this show, I've been waiting to say this. Actually, me and Nick kind of planned this a little bit on the way here, but this episode is going to be mouth-watering for one reason. Tell them why, Dan.
There are actually a lot of reasons, because you got to come check out Molly's Kitchen. So today, we're with Chu, CEO of Molly's Kitchen. And if you don't know Molly's Kitchen, you probably already have their food, but if you haven't, you're definitely going to come by, and we're going to get into a lot of cool stuff. Man, this is a family-owned business still, so it's going to be a really good time. Fresno-based, and like we always say, man, we love having people that are from Fresno doing big things. We touched on that a little bit off camera. You know, some of the stuff that you've done to help, you know, helped your mom grow the business and kind of grow her out of the business. It's really interesting, man. So that's some of the stuff we want to touch on, because we know that there's a lot of people out there that with the relatively small time that you've been kind of taking over the operations within your family's business, you've made some huge impact. And we know that there's a lot of people out there, especially in the restaurant business and all the other businesses as well, where they're kind of at that stage where you kind of have yourself a job and you don't quite have a business just yet, you know? So we're going to get into that. And before anything, dude, before you became the CEO of Molly's, how long had you been in the family business for, bro?
So I started off as an employee, mm-hmm. minimum wage.
How old were you, by the way?
What is that?
How old were you when you first started?
I don't even remember. 2021. So that's like 4 years ago.
Okay.
So I was like probably like 20. I'm 25 now, so I'm like 21.
21, 22. Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And then I stepped in May of 2022. I don't even know how old I was either. Like, I was probably, 23. Yeah, okay, I remember now. Because Hormozy started when he was 23. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the heck? I started when I was 23 too.
Yeah. Sick,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice, bro. So basically for the people at home, obviously now they hear you're the CEO of Molly's Kitchen, but it didn't start like that. And your mom, she's the founder of the business, right?
Yeah, she's the founder.
So how was that kind of conversation coming in? Like, was it something that the kind of family expected of you to come and be like an employee, or what was that? Did you have a choice? How was that at home, bro?
Yeah. So they expected me to be an employee. They didn't really expect me to be a partner.
Okay.
Yeah. My opinion didn't matter, dude. Because, you know, like parents, you're like, son, you don't know anything, dude. Stop trying to tell us what to do. We're gonna run the business how we want to run the business,
gotcha.
Right? Especially coming from my mom and dad, they've been running businesses their whole life. Mm. Ever since my dad was like, I would say like early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then to hear their son tell them what to do, like they're like, dude, shut up, dude. Like,
yeah. I feel like in that scenario, especially, I feel like that's always kind of like a thing in like the family business, right? You see it sometimes on the TV shows that are about family business or anything like that, where sometimes it's like the young generation is coming back up, but the elders, they've been in the game for so long that they're like, dude, you don't know anything. You're just a puppy. You know, like we've been through probably decades of owning a business, you know? Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, dude, that at first it was just like, they didn't really want your input. They were just like, okay, cool, perfect. Just come here, work, regular employee. Mm-hmm. So how was that transition, bro? Because it took like about 2 years, no? Mm-hmm. So what was that transition like from going from just like kind of clocking in, clocking out to kind of taking over the reins of the operations?
So I was working with them in 2020. I left to go work. I went to go work at FedEx. I went to go work at a warehouse job, Kraft Heinz. I hated it, dude. I hate warehouse jobs now. Yeah, so I came back and I was just an employee. It was a really hard transition. I had to really prove myself, right? I started just doing stuff on my own. Like, I started just like, okay, we should do this for marketing. Okay, we need signs, right? We didn't have a menu. Mm. Yeah, so I'm like, dude, obviously we need a menu. You know, how are customers going to know what to buy, right? Because one thing I know is if you make it hard for customers to buy, if they walk in and they're like, man, this is confusing. There's no menu. What the heck am I going to get? All right. You know, this is too hard. I'm going to go eat somewhere else where it's easier. Right. So I had a, that's why, like, I say like systems, you know, because we literally had no systems. Right. Mm. I had to do all
how,
that.
How were they selling before? But so, because I picture you say no menu and I'm like, so how does that work, bro?
So the menu was like this. It was just like a little dock. Right.
Okay.
With like some designs and some like the words on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And but not like, obviously, they come to your spot right now, see a nice, beautiful menu, all the stuff, super simple, looks really good, right? But, so it wasn't that way before.
Yeah, it wasn't that way before. Okay. It was just like a big paragraph, right? Okay. And right when you, okay, like when someone texts you and it's a big paragraph, You're like, bro, I don't want to read this.
It's no way.
I'm going to walk away. But when you organize it, like, okay, appetizers, right? Okay, these are the rice plates. These are the salads. This is a soup. It makes it a lot easier because they know they don't want the soup, so they're just going to go straight to the appetizers or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that makes perfect sense, bro. So, you know, your story, it kind of resonates with us a little bit, and we'll get into why right now. But you kind of just started, instead of, like, trying to tell somebody that you think you know what you're talking about, you just kind of took action, and you started putting it on paper, and putting it into motion, took the action,
yeah,
and it started working, right? So I'm guessing that your parents were like, okay, well, whatever he's doing, it's working because, like, you can see it at the bottom line. Mm-hmm. So then what was the conversation then once you kind of proved yourself a little bit?
Did you have to bring it up to them, by the way, or was it something they were like, hey, dude, you're killing it, Chew. Like, we're going to promote you.
No, yeah, I had to bring it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And, yeah, and even when I thought I proved myself already, they still didn't believe in me. Mm. Yeah. They're like, nah, this guy's, it's a fluke. You know, he doesn't know what he's talking about. The business just grew by itself. And I'm like, bro, the business was not going to grow by itself. No. You know?
And it's so tough too, bro, because it's you're their son too. So I feel like, if you're almost like a normal employee and you work there for years, like, there's kind of a little bit different because they haven't seen you in diapers, right? Like, parents seen you in diapers, they grew up with you, like, their perception of you is so different than, like, a normal employee, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, seriously. They didn't really believe in me until we surpassed 7 figures. Mm. And then they're like, okay, I think this guy kind of knows what he's talking about, right? Because we were at, like, 200, right? And then we went to, like, 400,000 or 500,000. And then we went to, like, 700,000, 800,000. And then now we went, boom, past a million. They're like, oh, shoot, this guy, like, it's actually growing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was because it was stagnant for the good, the first, like, 2 years, you know?
Yeah.
It was, I would say it's stagnant, but if anything, it was decreasing because sales were really high when it first opened up.
Yeah.
And then it went, you know, downhill. You know, not to talk bad on the business, but, you know, that's how
it's part of the game. Yeah, no, yeah. 100%.
It's part of any business, too, right? I feel like in the beginning, it's super exciting. You have a grand opening, maybe you have some balloons or something. And then naturally, after a couple years, it's like, okay, well, now what?
Especially
right?
when you don't improve the systems and you don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
sure.
You're not making it more efficient, like fulfilling orders. It's not efficient. And then, like, even the menu example, right? That's not efficient either, dude. The customers are going to be confused. No marketing, right? So nobody even knew we existed. People pass by and pump gas here all the time. And I would, when I was an employee here, I would literally hear like 5 times a day, dude, I didn't even know you guys were here. What the heck? Like, I'm like, yeah, because there's no signs out. Like, I already knew. You know, there's not, like, the sign up there is, like, not really, like, it's not a good sign.
Yeah.
And then the pictures, there was no pictures on the fence before. You see all the pictures out there now?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So now when they drive by, they're like, they see all the, like, it's kind of flashy now.
They know there's food there.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, okay, that's a restaurant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, that's almost the worst thing to hear as a business owner, right? Like, when you have a business and, like, someone says, I never knew you were here, and you're like, bro, I've been here for 2 years. That's like, it's like, bro, a shot in the gut that you need.
Yeah.
Like, you do not want to hear at all.
Yeah. It's pretty bad, dude. Especially when they like, dude, I pump here all the time. I live right there. And I always pump here. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And so, for obviously, I know we kind of jumped into it kind of quick, but for people that don't know at home, what is Molly's Kitchen and where can they find, where is it at, and what kind of food do you guys have?
So Molly's Kitchen, we are a brick and mortar restaurant. We serve Southeast Asian street food or Hmong street food. That's our slogan. We are on the corner, what is it, northeast corner of Temperance and Beaumont, yeah, in Fresno, California.
Nice, right nearby the 180, Hank Schwenk's Part 3, right here, baby.
Yeah.
Smells really good, too, by the way. Like, I just keep smelling it. I'm like,
I see people eating outside, and I'm like, just so that you guys know how hard it is to do this podcast right now, like, we're filming in the night, Thursday night, it's almost Friday, right? Mm-hmm. The diet's almost over. I see everything outside, and I'm like, man, as soon as we get done with this podcast, we're about to hear it.
Yeah, no, I'm going to get you guys some. Yeah,
I appreciate that, bro. You know, kind of something you kind of covered right now, right, is you went from 250 to seven figures, which is a million plus, right, for the people at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that, obviously, there is, like, a lot of things that you changed, that you, you know, new things you implemented that the business didn't have before, man. But one of the coolest things that just kind of doing research is that kind of allowed mom to kind of step away from the business, right? Like, it allowed her to have, like, a tangible asset that actually works for her instead of her owning a job, which it sounded like, because you said she was working long days,
dude,
right?
It was terrible, dude. I saw my own mom breaking down, like, mentally.
Wow.
Because literally, you would wake up early in the morning to prepare food for the restaurant and get it going. You'd operate all day. So that's like 5 a.m., right?
Yeah.
And you'd operate all day till closing, which is like 9 or 8 p.m., right?
That's insane.
It was 8 before. Now we close at 9.
Yeah.
And then after that, you'll clean, right? You still got dishes to do. You still got to prepare food again, because there's food you got to prepare overnight, and this food you got to prepare in the morning, right? So she wouldn't get done till like 1, 2, 3 a.m., and she'd start working again right at 5. And wow. I was just like, dude, you're killing yourself. She's, and then, you know, in her mind, she's like, you know, I'm doing this for you guys. You know, like, how else are we going to get money, right? It made me really sad because my siblings were all like, dude, we don't have a mom anymore. They like, I remember us having that conversation. Like, dude, our mom doesn't exist. She's just, all she does is just runs a business. The business is more important than her kids, right? That's what they all, like, had in their mind. I've heard my own sister say that. You know, like, dude, I feel like my mom and dad are putting the business above us because we don't get none of their attention. It's all the business only. Yeah. It really sucks seeing her do that. Yeah.
You know, I can only imagine, like, you talk about motivation, right? I mean, sometimes people need motivation to get up in the morning, but I feel like once you see your mom go through things like that, bro, like, that's all the motivation you need to run through a brick wall, right?
Like, yeah. You feel like shit. You're like, dude, I'm a terrible son. Like, why am I not helping her?
Doing something.
And helping her is not doing the stuff for her, right? Because you can only do the stuff for her so long, too. You're going to be stuck in the loop just like her.
Yeah.
Helping her is getting her out of the loop by getting systems in place, hiring employees, you know, team members to run the systems, right? The systems are not going to run themselves.
Yeah. And that's one key thing, like, kind of for everybody at home, right? What you're referring to is, oftentimes, like, in your entrepreneurial journey, you'll hear the thing, like, you'll hear the saying where, like, you don't own a business, you bought yourself a job, right? Especially when you first start. It's very true. Like, you're kind of wearing all the hats, marketing, operations, systems, management.
You look at, like, a franchisee, right? Yeah. Like, you look at Chick-fil-A, right? Yeah. I've heard of Chick-fil-A people where you have to work inside the Chick-fil-A. I don't know how it works, but I heard you have to work inside the Chick-fil-A. You have to be flipping the burgers and all that stuff, and you kind of just bought yourself a job. But you kind of saw it to be like, no, I don't want to buy her job. I want to, like, evaluate the asset, build it as an asset, and build it as an actual investment for long term, right?
Yeah. And with that, dude, it's so key because I'm sure that wasn't something new that she was doing, right? Like, you guys probably grew up watching her have those long 5 a.m. to 1 a.m. days for how many years, bro?
She started, so after the 2008 crash, they lost, their business basically went downhill. She started catering when I was in like seventh grade, so I think that's like 2012, 2013 era. Yeah, and I grew up, I would come back home from school and see her cooking, right? Yeah. I would, even when I was in high school, right? I would come back home with my friends, you know, because you're in high school now, you want to party, you guys want to hang out. We're literally all hanging out, and it's like 3 a.m., and I see her cooking, you know, catering to people. Dude. Yeah. So that's why she built her community for so long, from 2012 all the way to 2020. So that's why when she had her first grand opening in 2020, that's 8 years worth of community building right there. You know what I mean? So, like, the community supported her, like, heavily. We had lines, like, throughout the whole street, you know?
Wow.
So, like, she was, like, super happy. But if I'm going to be honest, the business was running like shit. Yeah. It wasn't because she's never ran a restaurant before.
Yeah.
So, like, it's – yes, we had the support the first few months. But since the business wasn't – the restaurant wasn't satisfying the customers,
yeah,
a lot of them didn't return. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why you started seeing the business go downhill.
Yeah. And dude, you know, kind of like preparing for the show, like, I mean, just talking to some other people on the shows before, like previous episodes, restaurants, they're one of the businesses with the highest failing ratios out of any industry.
Dude.
And it's because, like, a lot of people have really good cooking, like your mom, right? Badass cooking. But the thing about it is, like, being a badass chef or being a badass cook has nothing to do with having, like, business acumen or knowing how to run a business.
Yep.
So, I mean, like you said, it sounded like, obviously, her food was amazing because people, I mean, you don't stay in business catering for 8+ years if your food is not good. And then now she opened up the restaurant, completely different realm, right? A lot different than catering, I'm assuming. And she was just really stuck, dude. And, you know, it's really cool to hear this perspective on your end where you grew up seeing the mom as a business owner, you know, because I think, like, a lot of our audience is probably the business owner. But very rarely do they get to hear the perspective of somebody who grew up watching their parents, like, really toil away. Even though they're doing it for you, you know, even though they're doing it for the kids, it is tough to see, like, your parent kind of disappear for the sake of, like, money, you know, or the business. So,
Did you feel like, bro, watching, on the same note Danny talked about, you feel like watching your mom grow up like that, staying up till 3 a.m., always constantly working, do you feel like that motivated you more to want to start your own business and kind of want to go into business? Because I feel like, for the most part, most people see that, and they're like, I don't want any part of that, right? Like,
yeah. I always knew I wanted a business. I originally went to college, and I was going to become a mechanical engineer. And I thought, oh, when I have money, I'll open up a business, right? It was just something I always assumed because, you know, when you grow up around businessmen, you just know that's, like, the step to go.
Yeah.
And you said growing up around seeing that, you know, like, how did it, like, kind of, like, affect me? It taught me that, like, it takes hard work, you know? I was used to it. It's not, like, anything surprising to me. I was used to being around farmers, you know? I was used to being around other businessmen who busted their fucking ass every day. So, like, I wasn't scared. Like, I knew what it took.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, I overestimated, because all the hard work I did the first year of entrepreneurship, I thought it was going to get us to, like, 600,000-800,000
mm-hmm.
And then boom, it got us to over a million. I was like, what the heck? That's like true. I overestimated like a ton. What yeah. the like we're before the time I knew it, like we're already making like over 100,000 a month. I was like, whoa, I did not expect that. I thought we're gonna be around like 60,000-70,000 a month. Yeah.
Bro, that's so good, because I feel like that's such a big opposite of most people, right? Most people underestimate the work it's going to take to run a business, and consequently, they're out of business in a couple years.
And that's because they're not surrounded by other entrepreneurs. Mm. So they think, oh, it's going to be easy. You know, I just got to do this, and I'll get tons of customers. I saw all the busting ass, like, with all the, because we sell movies, with all the other vendors who sold movies. And I'm like, damn, they're busting ass and they're barely getting by.
Yep.
I got to work 10 times harder than them if I want to, you know.
So how did that go, bro? Pause you real quick. You said you used to sell movies.
Yeah. Yeah. I grew up selling movies with my parents. Yeah. We used to sell Hmong movies.
Really? Sure. Okay.
Yeah. They would go to events and sell Hmong movies.
I thought you meant like the illegal bootleg one.
Bootleg?
I probably bought a couple from you, maybe.
Yeah, no, they Hmong dub movies too. Like they'll get Chinese movies and they'll Hmong dub it. Yeah.
Okay. So add like the subtitles and everything?
They would literally go in and like put like their own voice into it. Like I watch all these old Hmong movies and I hear all my uncle's voice in it. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. So then you guys would resell that, because there's a pretty big Hmong community here in Fresno.
It was like huge.
Gigantic.
Yeah. But that market got taken down by YouTube. Right? Because why would you buy a Hmong dub movie when it's on? It's like somebody bought it and they posted it up on YouTube.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
So when you can just go watch it on
there. It's free.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to stop you, bro, because when I heard you sold movies, I'm like, okay, look, that's pretty interesting. Let me just stop real quick. Okay, sorry to throw you off, bro.
I sold movies since I was probably like 7 years old.
Bro, you've been an entrepreneur since birth. I feel like you came out of the womb, put a pamper on you, put something to sell, and you're ready to go.
Dude, I didn't want to sell, and I just saw myself as an employee. I didn't really think like I was like a businessman. I'm just like, okay, I'm just working for my parents, and they'll pay me here and there. But I hated doing it. I wanted to go and like have fun, because you know, Hmong New Year's is fun. You get to hang out with all your friends.
Yeah.
And like, I would argue with my parents, like, dude, I don't want to sell movies, man. I just want to go have fun.
Yeah. And that's so true, because especially growing up, I mean, like, dude, like kids, you don't want to go to work. You'd rather go have fun, you know?
Dude, I hated it. Yeah. I'm glad my parents made me work so hard as a kid.
Yeah.
Because I would literally set up, sell movies all day, and then like tear down the, you know, the booth, the tent. Because like now, like I have really strong like work ethics. Like, like I said, I thought it was going to take hella work to, you know, get to seven figures, but, you know, I overestimated.
That's probably one of the coolest things, bro, where you like you learn probably like arguably one of the best skills you could learn, like in the entrepreneurship journey, dude. It's just like sheer hard fucking work and like dedication, you know, because like Ann said, I feel like sometimes it's super easy to like underestimate like the amount of work that it's going to take to get to wherever you want to go.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really cool to see, bro. And one thing I want to loop back to is taking mom out of business, like taking, not, I don't want to say out of the business, but removing her from the loop that you were talking about, right?
Yeah.
So what did that look like, bro? What was like the steps? Because obviously you saw the problem, you've experienced the problem as like her kid, you know, in the family.
Mm-hmm.
So what were the steps you took to take mom out of the day-to-day operations?
All right. So these are the steps I took, and these are the steps I tell other, because other business owners, they reach out, they want to know how to do it too. And this is exactly what I tell them. Replace the cheapest, like, things you can replace.
Mm.
So like answering the phone, that's like a minimum wage job. Like flipping burgers, that's a minimum wage. Replace all those first, right?
Mm.
Because you're not making a lot of money. You can't just hire a store manager right away.
Yeah.
You gotta hire the very cheap stuff first and work your way up from there, you know. So instead of her running the operations all day, we would hire people to run the operations all day, because it's minimum wage, it's cheap. Well, we pay more than minimum wage now. Like we don't want to pay minimum wage. Cause it's, you got to be competitive, you know.
Tracks around the crowd too.
Yeah, as business owners, and then after that, well, actually, first hire people to prep in the morning, and then after that, we hire people to run the operations in the day to day, and then what else? That completely took her out already, because they're doing everything for her now. She just comes and makes sauce And now we're looking to hire a sauce company too to manufacture sauces for us.
Oh, sick.
So we won't have to make. So she wants to come and make sauce like once every week. Yeah. It's a lot of work. Yeah.
Oh, but I can only imagine her feeling, right? Where she's been working. I mean, we talked about her doing the catering business for 8 years and then you open up this restaurant and stuff. And I can only imagine her feeling, bro, like coming in the restaurant, seeing everything prep, seeing everything good to go. And she's just like, man, like.
Dude, I don't know how she felt. I would always ask her, I'm like, Mom, how does it feel, dude? You don't got to work anymore. Because obviously, like, I want to know how she felt because I'm doing it for her, you know?
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, it feels nice. You know, I get to go because she went on her, like, she went on multiple vacations when she first started not having to work anymore.
Nice. So that's awesome.
And then she's like, oh, I get to see my kids now. Like, she got to see my son, her grandkids. She gets to hang out with my younger sister. It felt really good for me. I just feel like she wasn't really open about how she felt, you know, to me. But I'm sure she's happy. Like, who wouldn't be happy?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she went on a ton of vacations, man. So I'm sure she definitely enjoyed them. And I'm sure she thought of you and the work you put in, man, to to allow her to have those vacations. Because I also feel, too, it's probably like a little bit of guilt in there. You know, like so often, like growing up, like you're taught, like, oh, you got to work super hard, super hard, super hard. So the moment that you don't have to work super hard and you're still getting awesome results.
Dude, she felt hella weird.
Feels
she,
weird.
Because, you know, like, especially the older generation, I always got to hustle. I always got to hustle. So, like, as soon as she got to sit down, she didn't know what to do. She's like, oh, no, I want to go work again. I want to go hustle again.
Got
to
keep moving.
She kept coming in still, even though, like, there was nothing for her to do. She'll just come in and, like, try to find something to do, you know? Yeah.
That's natural, bro. I mean, even like us, right? Whenever we went out in the office a couple times, like we've been there 8.5 years, and whenever we're not there, sometimes it you kind of just feel like
you're like anxious a little bit.
It's like, what the fuck?
I get that. I don't think I'm ever going to retire. I'm always going to be taking the business to the next level.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because as soon as I go like 1 or 2 days just staying home and doing nothing, I get like super like bad anxiety. And I'm like, dude, like I'm doing nothing, man. I'm not making any progress.
It's
I got to go.
It's like you're behind, right? Like
you're falling behind. Yeah. I tell my wife about it, you know. And she thought I was kind of crazy, but then since we go to I took her to like these events, and she got to meet like other entrepreneurs who are way further than me. They're like, bro, this is normal, dude. Like, if you don't feel this way, you're never gonna make progress. You gotta feel like shit. Like when you don't go to the gym, you're like, oh man, I'm freaking fat as hell now. I wanna go back. And you know, I stopped going to the gym like 2-3 years ago already. But I just wanted to get something for everyone to relate with.
Yeah. No, that's awesome, dude. One thing though, that you touched on a couple things there, dude. We talk about conferences, which we're gonna get into, but one of the things too is as we talked about like implementing operations and all these things. How did you learn how did you learn about the operations, bro? Like, what steps did you take to learn? Because obviously, operations, you know, replacing labor and stuff like that were key things in scaling and taking mom out of the business. Mm-hmm. But how did you learn how to do those things?
So there was a really core book that I read from that taught me, like, it just opened my eyes. And I was like, okay, as soon as I read it, I was like, okay, we're running the business completely wrong. This is not how you run a business. The E-Myth, right? You guys heard of it?
Yeah.
Michael Gerber, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I read it and I was like, oh my God, everything I've been telling my mom is exactly what this guy says. But since I wasn't sure what I was telling her was like good stuff or not, then I didn't act on it. But since I read the book and I was like, okay, this guy just confirmed it. All right, let me start replacing, my mom, right? Because they're like, okay, the business owner is supposed to work on the business, not in the business, yeah. Right? And I don't think my mom's going to, you know, work on the business. So I started working on the business for her, yeah.
That's badass, bro. It's crazy how, like, a lot of people at home, you know, you're one book away or one piece of knowledge away from, like, completely changing the trajectory, right? Just for you, for your family and for your business, you know, that book, the stuff you learned there, it was already kind of innate. You were already thinking about it, but it kind of confirmed to you, like, okay, this is exactly the steps I got to take. And you just took action. You started doing it, and then you went from 250 a year to $1 million a year, $1 million plus, you know, revenue a year. And most importantly, all I would argue is that you're able to kind of give your mom freedom, right? The freedom that a business is supposed to get you.
Yeah.
So that's fucking badass, bro. That's a badass story. If you want to have a little lesson, I'm gonna take Anthony's signature line, rewind this last, you know, a couple of minutes, rewatch them, and you'll learn how to get yourself, you know, out of the business, right? Like, not own a business and not own a freaking job.
The fact that you not only took your mom out of the business, like Danny was talking about, but also you took the business from where it was before all the way to 7 figures, dude. It's something that not many people and not many businesses do in general, bro. So one of the things I kind of had, just kind of talking about it, I thought I had, is obviously one of the biggest things you talked about is replacing yourself, replacing your mom in the business, is employees, right? Yeah. One of the biggest things people have in a business, and we've had too in the past as well, is just like hiring the right people and also knowing when to fire the wrong people, right? So talk about that, dude.
That's what so many business owners struggle with. Well, they're first of all, the first hurdle is they're afraid to let go of control. So that, so like they're like, oh no, if my if I hire employees, they're not going to do as good of a job as me. But if you never hire them, you're going to be stuck in this loop forever, right? Because yes, they're going to suck at first, but they're going to eventually get better. Who the heck is good when they first start a job? Nobody,
yeah,
right?
100%.
Everyone's going to suck. I suck when I first started. And then after that, it's being able to like know when someone's good, catch talent, right? And attract like good talent too. It was hella hard, dude. You in the beginning, all the applicants were like very, like for lack of a better word, like low level applicants, which is fine. You know, it's it got us by in the beginning, but now we get a lot of high level, I wouldn't say high level, but higher level applicants for a restaurant, and it makes it way easier. You're able to like, dude, when everyone's like an A player, it's hella easy, dude, and that comes with branding. You got to build a name for yourself and build a good brand, or else nobody's going to want to work for you. Yeah.
Look, you have, dude. I see some of the videos you put out online, right? Maybe we'll pop up a couple, but if you look on his Instagram, bro, like they generally seem excited to work here, bro. Like they're excited about it. They're excited to be here. They're happy. They have a smile on their face. So when you're talking about like attracting those type of people, I think really it comes back to you, bro. Cause like whenever we meet you, I know people at home watching this as well, they can probably feel your smile through the camera a little bit. Right. So yeah. It's just an all around good atmosphere, bro.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't know. I always smile. Even when I was just an employee here and like customers come in, like, dude, just smile at them. You know, it's cause I hate it when I go somewhere and like, they're like mad dogging me.
Kind of makes you feel weird a little
dude,
bit.
Dude, it makes me want to leave.
Feel awkward.
Like, yeah, I'm like, I don't want to order anymore. Like, you guys don't seem happy to have me here, you know? Yeah. So that's, I don't know. Like, so from that, I just like, okay, you should always smile at customers and even just people in general. It just makes them feel more welcome. Yeah.
100%, man. You know, one of the next things I want to get into is, you know, Anthony touched on it right now, and you alluded to that too right now, talking about obviously to attract better talent. Part of it is like you got to have a brand. You got to be an established brand that people are like, oh shoot, they're doing big things. I want to be part of that team that they're doing big things, right? Like they see themselves excelling in that. But I think a big part of building a brand nowadays, especially, it has to do a lot with the content, right? With the content you're putting out on the platforms, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, whatever your platform is, dude. So talk about that, bro. Talk about the idea of content in the restaurant business, because obviously I feel like, you know, every day if I go on TikTok right now, I'm going to see like a viral clip about fucking food or a restaurant, right? Like, it's just, it's a given. But yeah, there's still a lot of businesses and a lot of restaurants who I think that they don't think that's a key part of the business, bro.
Oh my God.
But you're doing a badass job at it. We looked at your page, bro, and like, I know you're getting like worked up about it, bro. So get into that a little bit, bro. Get into content in the restaurant business.
I meet so many restaurant owners who don't utilize content or social media. And I'm like, dude, what are you guys doing? Like, people, you know how many times I've heard, oh, I go on Instagram just so like to look at food, or I go there to post food. Dude, people go on Instagram for the food.
I'm up at 1 a.m. looking at food.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you.
Restaurant, like, it's a staple. Content and social media is a staple for restaurants. And if you're not utilizing it, dude, you're behind. Like, you're not going to last. Business is all about adapting and doing, like, the next best thing all the time. How are you going to keep up with your competitors when like they're blowing up on social media and you're not?
Yeah.
Right?
It's free too.
Yeah. Well, dude, yeah, and it's free. It's literally, you don't got to pay anything for it and you're choosing not to do it. Yeah. It makes no sense to me. And then the main argument I hear from restaurant owners is like, oh, I don't have time. Mm. I'm like, dude, then hire people to run your operations so you can utilize social media for marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think content is the first strategy everyone should always do in the restaurant industry. Yeah. And then after that, you know, I stepped into running ads after that. I don't run the ads. I just hired a company to run ads for me. I think that's the next strategy you should do, and just in my opinion.
Yeah, and you're doing it well, bro. And obviously, we talked a lot about competition, restaurants. There's people that are not doing it right now. So what's one of the ways you compete with that, bro? Like, because obviously, there's so many freaking different restaurants on every single corner, bro. And, like, what makes you guys different, really? And how
do you communicate that?
Yeah, how are you guys able to communicate that, bro?
So people go eat out for the experience. Dude, like, people say it's for the food. Nah, dude, it's for the experience. They want to have a good time. That's why Raising Cane's put so much money into making their... Have you guys been inside Raising Cane's?
Yeah.
There's like a disco. There's like... it feels hella nice being in there.
Yeah, it does.
Dude, that's why Raising Cane's blew up so fast. Mm. So I look up to them a lot because they started in the 90s and they're catching up to Chick-fil-A. They're catching up to everyone, like, and super quick. Mm. When Chick-fil-A opened up in 1940s, and they're barely that big. I wouldn't say barely because they're multi-billion dollar company, yeah. right? But you know, Raising Cane's is catching up because they utilize all these things. They make the experience really nice, and then the whole point of social media is communicating that over to people why they should come to your restaurant because of the experience. Yeah,
it's so true, dude. Even like you know, one of the ones I think of too when you're talking about the experience and like the quick growth, dude, is like Crumble, right? The Crumble cookies, you've heard about them?
Oh hell yeah,
yeah, dude.
They,
I mean,
they blew up, dude.
Yeah, dude. I think they just crossed like they're worth over $1 billion now.
Holy,
as a company,
5 years
in 5 years,
so quick, man.
Massive, dude. And when you look at their page. Dude, every I think Sunday, right? They post the new cookies for Monday.
You gotta put me on blast. Right
hey,
right?
Whoa, I mean, dude, you know it.
Here's the thing. So let me tell you this, Drew. Let me tell you why he pointed at me and put me on blast right now. So I'm just gonna rat out myself. Every single week on Saturday, after the office, we get out at 2 o'clock. I literally, I'm not proud of it, but I drive myself like clockwork, almost like habit, to Crumble Cookie location. I get every single flavor.
Dude, there's nothing wrong with that, man. What's wrong with that?
There isn't.
He kind of shames me sometimes. Nah. I mean, I know I'm on a diet, but I mean, bro, it's the weekend. You know?
Just keep you accountable for the goals, bro. Just keep you accountable for your goals.
Fair enough.
But it's so true, man. Because like for them, even to me, like Sunday, they usually drop like the content. Like it's a fucking hype up video of cookies that are gonna come out for the next week. And like when you put it that way, you know, it sounds kind of like
hype video for cookies.
A hype video for cookies. Yeah, but dude, it drives your business.
Yeah, no, it does. You could have the best experience ever, and you could invest, like, because in order to, like, do all the interdesign, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
You can invest all that money all you want, but if customers don't know about it, then...
It doesn't mean anything.
Good luck. You just dropped over 100K for nothing when you could just make content about it and communicate over it. Oh, yeah, you should come to our restaurant because we have the best experience. This is why you should come, because it's super fun.
Yeah.
We got a little disco. We play, like, the best music here. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's so true, man. I forget which like internet entrepreneur said this, but it kind of stuck with us at the very early in our careers. And I think it might have been freaking Grant Cardone, dude. He says something along the lines of like, it's not the best business that wins, it's the most known business that wins, you know. And I feel like it's especially true in the restaurant industry, you know, like the people that are, I've gone to some restaurants where they have a hella hype. You go in there, you get the burger, and it's not it, you know. And you don't go back because of that, but
sometimes
they got
you
through
back,
the door.
Right? Like sometimes you do go back if it has really good service like you're talking about.
Yeah.
And sometimes a total opposite, right? You guys ever been in restaurants where it's like food super good? The sure waiter's
dead.
A jerk. Yeah. You never want to go back. And you're like, dude, like that flavor is so good, but it's just service.
I've ate some bomb-ass food from mom and pops. And then like, I still go back though, but it's completely dead. And I feel so bad because I'm just like, dude, I could literally blow up your restaurant right now. You know, like there's all these little things I could just help you change, but they don't want you to do that anyways, because you know a lot of mom and pops, they're really
stuck in their ways.
Yeah, they're stuck to their ways, and they don't want you to tell them what to do. Yeah.
But what are your top mom and pops around here in Fresno?
I really like for pho. I like eating at Pho Paradise.
Okay.
But it's because I live next to there too, so it's very convenient for me. I love Don Pepe's.
Okay.
So
Don Pepe's is good.
Yeah. I literally just ate there yesterday. Yeah, I want to go eat there with my wife and my son.
Nice.
I don't know if I would call that mom and pop anymore because they've grown pretty big. They got like 4 or 5 locations now, and I'm pretty sure they're an 8-figure restaurant company now already too. Because they're, dude, when I go there, it's hella busy. There's always a line, dude. Yeah. I can't think of any other mom and pop because I usually just eat pho and I'll eat Mexican food.
Okay. You know what? That's a good rotation, bro.
That's all you need, bro.
I feel that's all you need in life.
Oh, Maui Hawaiian Barbecue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that in Fresno?
Willow and Herndon.
Willow Herndon. Okay.
Yeah.
Check it out.
I eat there. They got bomb Hawaiian barbecue, dude.
Really?
In my opinion, better than Ono, and that's just because they got actual steak in their Hawaiian barbecue.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, but that's just me, though. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not trying to hate on anyone.
you know what? I like the Hawaiian barbecue, so I'm going to have to try that spot, dude. And next thing we want to get into, bro, is you've been kind of talking about this a little bit. Off camera, we talked a little bit about it, about the idea of self-development, too, right? One of the biggest things that you did was you took on probably, it sounds like one of the earliest things in your self-development journey was reading the E-Myth, right?
Yep.
And then now we're talking about going to conferences and stuff right now, a little bit off camera in the break. So what went into, like, what motivated you, bro, to even get into the self-development? Like, to even begin to realize, like, okay, you know what? Chew right now is not the chew that can make big things happen, but I can be that person. I just got to get the right information. How did you get into that?
You got to hate your life. Yeah, that's no. You have to,
bro. I love that response.
You have to. If you're comfortable, you will not change because you like it. You like your life. So why would you want your life to be any different when you're happy, right? You got to hate your life so much that you're like, dude, I'll do anything to get out of this, dude. That's why when you see immigrants come from third world countries, like my parents and my grandparents, they came from, well, they were in Laos, they went to Thailand, and they came here. Mm. And they hated their life because they're being chased down with guns during the Vietnam War, right? Yeah. So now when they come here, they're like, dude, I hate my life so much. I want to change and I want to grind so hard that I never have to go back. So that's why when they came here, even though they had literally $0, my grandpa had five wives. And with each wife, he had like over 10 kids. And they all lived in a little house. They had hella kids living there. And they were able to, you know, get out of that. They were able to grind their way out of that.
It's like 50 kids.
Yeah. Most people would just rather live on welfare.
That's like as big as Minkler, bro. Your grandpa just populated Minkler.
Yeah, dude. Hmong people, they like having multiple wives. Yeah, back then. Yeah.
Back then.
I only have one wife now. Yeah.
for the record.
Pretty clarify. Yeah. good catch, bro.
Yeah.
It would be a long drive home.
Hey, you know what, dude? That's probably like one of the realest answers. And it's so true because even like I look at my journey, like I was on my mom's couch, like fucking was doing things I wasn't supposed to be doing. Ended up on my mom's couch, like without shit. And it's true, dude, like, I look back at it when you said that, you got to hate your life. Like, I physically, like, I looked at myself in the mirror. I'm like, dude, like, I fucking hate where I'm at in life. And sure enough, dude, like that, it'll spark that fire in you behind you. It'll give you that kick in the ass, dude, to start going on a new path, man. So
it's almost like whenever you go to work, you're not really like going to work, right? You're almost like that's your free time. Because I feel like whenever you hate your life so much, whenever you're at home, you're living it, right? So, like, the more you get to go to work, it's almost fun. It's like, yes, I get to escape all this other crap. I get to go make some money, make my dreams come true, or just give me a shot, right?
Yep. Hey, work is fun, bro. Like, when you really enjoy working your business, that's when you start making money, if I'm going to be honest. Yeah. But an example I like to give, too, back to the other scenario, right? You got to hate your life, right? The opposite situation, if you're a spoiled kid, who your parents take really good care of you. You don't got to pay for anything. You literally don't have to make any money. You just stay home and your mom and dad makes all the money for you. You're never going to move out. You're always going to want to live there. And even if your parents try to kick you out, you're just going to throw a tantrum. Like, oh, I don't want to leave. I just want to stay here. Right? Because you're comfortable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you just want to be comfortable, you will never grow. Yeah. And that's fine. You can stay comfortable, you know, and let other people grow instead. Yeah.
Yeah, which shit is key, bro. I feel like it's tough. A lot of people in that same scenario, right? Like, whenever you're comfortable, you talked about the gym, right? Like I know before, whenever I was growing up, I was super chubby, bro, and I hated it. Like, you talk about hating it. I hated it. I would get made fun of all the time growing up.
I was a chubby
kid, too. Yeah, bro, all day. So I think it's probably why I wear big shirts today. I'm just used to it, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, I hated it so much where I don't know when I switched it, but I was like, you know what? I didn't say I was going to starve myself, but I was like, you know, I'm going to, like, take the next step, whatever forward I need to take. To change whatever I need to change.
Bro, I went through the same thing. I hated being chubby. Like, literally, I would go to school and, like, the other kids would, like, flip my titties. Right? Yeah, they literally flip my titties. Yeah. I'm like, oh, my God, I freaking hate that. And I hated being weak because I was a weak, chubby kid.
Yeah.
I was hella weak. So I started doing push-ups at home. I started working out. And all of a sudden, like, I had a six-pack. And all of a sudden, I was, like, fit. And I was like, oh, what the heck?
Dang,
like,
bro. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't even know I had a six-pack until I looked in the mirror one day, and I had a six-pack. Just because
no
I didn't like being weak. Yeah. And from then on, I was always fit until I had my son. And then I started working, and then I got pretty fat. I went from 180 pounds, and my body fat percentage was pretty low, too. I never counted it, but I could tell it was pretty low. My highest was 230 pounds. Yeah, so I gained like 50 pounds. From 2020 to like 2023. Yeah. Yeah. Now I'm back at like, I range from 210 to 215 right now.
Cool thing, bro, is you did it once. You got a six pack once. You can get it again, bro.
Back, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Hey, I'm not going to lie though. I like being fat.
Yeah.
Dude, you're hella strong.
Wait, what?
Dude, I went to go weightlift.
But do you think it's so like, here's like a, like, not to cut you off a little bit, but I think there's also two things here. There's like, one, you get like the man strength. How old are you right now? 25?
Yeah, I'm 25.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like right around then, dude, you get like, you know, my dad told me this growing up. I thought he was full of shit. Because I grew up high school playing ball, you know, competitive. Yeah. And he was like, bro, he's like, once you get old enough, like, you get man strength. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about, man strength, bro? And now you're a dad too, bro. So I think that goes into it, bro. That's like a real thing, dude.
Bro, it's like, I don't call it man strength. I call it like fat boy strength. Dude, because my highest deadlift was always like 280 for the longest time when I was 180 pounds. And as soon as I got fat, I went back and I don't work out anymore. I threw up 330 pounds. Yeah. Shit. Yeah, and I was like, what the hell? Why am I so strong? Like, if I really worked out again, I could probably like throw up like 400 to 50, something around there.
You
right?
may be onto something, bro. I don't know. I'm no gym trainer or nothing, but you may be onto something.
Yeah, but I don't like that I'm always tired. Dude, mm-hmm. fat people, like after like a day of work, you just go home and knock out on the couch, dude. So that's why I started working out again. Yeah. So I had to work out again because being fat was affecting my business.
Because your health.
My output, like I could be putting out a lot of work, but since I get so tired and I knock out, yeah. I couldn't, my output wasn't there. Yeah. So I had to start working out again and take care of my health. Yeah.
It's good, bro. You are doing that. And on the topic of output, bro, one of the things that kind of crossed my mind a little bit, talking about the business, talking about you taking over the business as far as you being the CEO, what did your siblings have to say about it, bro? Obviously, like, was there any jealousy at all? And how did you get through that?
I don't think there was a lot of jealousy. It is weird when your younger brother tells you what to do, though. Yeah. So,
Do they work here too?
Yeah. My older brother, he's also a partner.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nice. My older brother is also a partner. My younger, I only have one older sibling. Yeah. My younger siblings, they're pretty used to me telling them what to do.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's pretty weird. Like, hey, let's do this with the business. And they're like, oh, you know, like, why am I taking orders from you? It's not really jealousy. It's just weird. Cause I don't take orders from my younger siblings either. Honestly, it's kind of weird. Yeah,
for sure.
So it's understandable. It's nothing negative. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting, bro. And one of the things that it's cool to hear, bro, is that I feel like immigrants sometimes can be the richest people because they're the best at starting the businesses. And, and here's why I say that, right? The reason why I say that is me and Dan talked a bunch of times about this before, right? Is like a lot of times, and sometimes Mexican culture doesn't always have, how do you explain it? I don't want to say it like wrong way, but like, oh, I'm just gonna say it. So sometimes I tread lightly sometimes. So I feel like sometimes in Hispanic culture, and I'm sure the other cultures as well, it's really like about like the crab method, right? Where it's like try to pull each other down sometimes. And unless you come from, like if you came from Mexico, you come from a different country, sometimes whenever you come here, I feel like you bond together. And it's like the businesses you start, like it's together thing, right? Mm-hmm. And you talk about right now, like it's a family business that you have. Sometimes I feel like in the Hispanic culture, they won't do that because it's more of like a combative thing.
Like a big ego thing.
It's a big ego thing, right? Yeah. Like how did you explain it before, Dan? Because I know I'm kind of butchering a little bit.
So like even like, for example, like particular Mexican culture, like nothing blah, blah, blah. Like I'm from Mexico, got here 13. And in Mexico and over here, so like in the States, there's like a famous saying where like, a Mexican's worst enemy, like translated obviously, is a Mexican's worst enemy is another Mexican. And it's kind of like that thing, like the crab in the boiling pot where, you know, oftentimes you see like, maybe you can see other cultures, right? Where they come together, they work together. And even though it's like, you're not the main guy or the main person there, like you eventually get to that point, but you work together, you build something that mutually benefits everybody, right? And like, you might not be that guy then, but if you stick to the program, you eventually become that guy and everybody else grows as a whole, you know?
So I think it's a scarcity thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because when you live your whole life in like scarcity, like third world countries, right? You're like, oh, it's all mine. I want everything only, you know, like I don't want to share anything, right? It's because you've done that your whole life. Yeah. You couldn't share anything your whole life because you've lived in a third world country, right? So it's really weird to switch that over into an abundance mindset where, oh, we all could succeed. We all could have success. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, it's so true, dude, because the and that's a really good point, actually. I never thought about it that way where you come from like living in survival, living in scarcity from like a third world country. So like, you know, and when you're in that space is if somebody else has something, that means that you don't have something.
Yeah.
But when you come to a place like arguably America, it's still the greatest country in the world, I think. There's nowhere else.
There's no scarcity in America, dude.
No, there isn't. And what do you
have to say to you on the same note? Sorry. Good job. What do you have to say to people that say America's not the greatest country in the world and there's not enough opportunity here?
I don't know if I agree with that statement, right? Like it's the greatest country in the world, but there's tons of opportunity here. There's no scarcity for success here, dude. Anyone could succeed here as long as you live in America and you're like, you know, like you have average intelligence, right? And you're not like, no, all you need is average intelligence, dude. You could kill it here. No, because you don't got to be smart. I have lots of friends who I believe are smarter than me and like, could do a lot more than me, right? Because, you know, we play video games and they're better at video games than me. We play sports and they're better at sports than me. But since they believe in scarcity and they believe they can't succeed, they don't succeed and they don't do more because they're stuck in their mindset of scarcity, you know, and it feels sad. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's so true, because I feel like one big thing about the States that's very different than other countries is where, like you said, you just got to be an average person with enough hard work. Like, the market speaks, bro. Like, it doesn't lie. Like, you put in the work, you come up with a good product, good food, whatever the case may be, and you'll find yourself like this, where, like, you know, your family, they're a lineage of immigrants. Like, you know, in Laos, you're fucking running away from guns and shit. And you come over here, and the next thing you know, you're building, like, what's on pace to be a multi-million dollar business, man. So it's... 100%, man. I think it really does come down to, like, not fucking thinking of scarcity.
Yeah. There's too much success to go around.
Yeah.
Because the demand for success is... how do you get success? You help other people, right?
Yeah.
And the population is getting bigger and bigger every day. There's more and more people who need help. There's limitless numbers of success to go around to everyone. And there's not enough people starting businesses and helping other people out. There's not.
Yeah.
The demand is just getting higher and higher. So it's kind of weird. I know because I was stuck in that mindset too of scarcity. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, there's not enough success to go around. But now that I'm in this mindset of abundance, I'm like, dude, there's too much success to go around. I could just claim it all. But like, if everyone just shifts their mindset to abundance, everyone can start claiming it all, yeah. You know, but they just don't.
There's never a shortage of clients, right?
I mean,
there's so many people in this world where you can always get more clients.
People always want food. Dude, Fresno's growing, right?
Huge.
Yeah. People are always moving to Fresno. They're always having kids. There's always more and more people who wants food. So why are you going to be stuck in the, like, you know, mindset of scarcity? You know, and that's if we're talking about restaurants. Yeah, there's other stuff we could talk about too, like iPhones, Apple,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
More and more people are going to want more technology. The population in America and in the world is getting bigger and bigger. There's more and more clients for you to help now. Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Very true.
Yeah. That's a good thing to live by, bro. There's always more than enough.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's sad that a lot of people don't. And on the topic of not being scarce, bro, and I know you share a lot on your social media as well, and you're always giving free game as well. We talked about before the podcast how you're always dropping game. Yeah. If someone's at home right now and they're like, dude, I want to start, like, my own business. I want to start my own restaurant. Or maybe if it's an entirely different industry, right? Mm-hmm. What's, like, the number one or top two, top three tips of advice you can give them on starting that business and progressing?
I don't like starting from zero. I'm not going to lie. Like, you guys know this too, because you guys started with Matt Graney. Mm-hmm. So you guys leverage Matt. I leverage my mom, right? You got to leverage, if you want success fast, you got to leverage things. Mm-hmm. Go and help out someone who's struggling. Let's say restaurants. Their restaurant's not going too well, but they got a good product, right? And you know exactly how to help them out, right? So you got to bring some value too. And help them out and blow them up. Because if you can't help them out, why are you going to go start your own business?
No.
Right? You're going to fail too. You're going to start your own business and you're not going to understand it and you're going to fail. Right? Why would you do that when you can help someone else out and get their business up and booming? And then now you get some, like, you guys got equity in Matt's business now too, right? And because you guys grew out the business for him, right? So that made your success a lot faster. Then imagine if you started from zero, you should try to start your own insurance company. Dude, it would take you, like, years to even, like, pop off.
Dude, that's the thing. It's so key what you said, bro, because I feel like most people think they have to do that, right? Like, most people think, my name has to be the one on the wall. I have to be the one to start it from scratch.
It's an ego thing. Yeah.
100%, bro. But you don't. Like, you can start your own business inside of another business already that's already been going. Like you said, as long as you're providing value, eventually the value is going to come back your way, right? It's always reciprocated. If you're always living in that like mindset of there's always more than enough, eventually it's always going to come back, right?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, and you got to do it for free. So, like, for Love example, that. Yeah, for example, if Mali's Kitchen goes downhill and I'm not a partner anymore, right? I'm going to go to another person's business, another person's restaurant. I'm like, hey, I want to grow out your restaurant for free. I literally just want, like, to get you more sales, and it's going to help me out, you know. Let's say if I'm new, it's going to help me out because I get to hone my skills. And then now when you start, let's say I took them again from 200 to 200,000 to, like, 800,000. Now I'm like, hey, dude, I could take you to over a mil, man. If you let me become a partner, or if you pay me a set amount. And are they going to say no? Hell no, dude. You just freaking quadruple their sales from 200,000 to 800,000. They're not going to say no to you anymore. Yeah. They're going to be like, oh, I want more of what you got, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's the thing we talked about, bro. Taking advantage of the opportunity, providing value. And it's so key what you said, bro. Why should they work for free? Like, if they're watching this at home, why do they need to work for free?
Oh, why do they need to work for free?
Yeah.
Because you need to make it risk-free for them. And you don't even know if you can provide value yet. Why would you want to charge someone for something that you don't even know if you can actually do? Mm. Have you actually grown a restaurant before? No. Then why are you going to charge for it? You're a freaking scammer. That's a scammer, in my opinion. Yeah.
That's true.
That's a scam.
Yeah.
You're lying to someone. You're telling someone you could grow their business out when you don't even know if you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's okay, bro, because even early on in our career, we're like, fuck, dude, we did like, I mean, actually, everything we did was for free. To this day, you know, we still do a lot of stuff. Well, it comes back in the long run, but it's free, bro. It's a lot of free work. And you're right, dude. It's like,
there's been tons of stuff, right? Like, there's lists of stuff we've done for our business, for different people's businesses, like free videos, tons of free stuff, bro. And a lot of people don't understand it. They're like, why would you do that? No, you need to collect money now. You're not going to get paid. Yep. But it's like, dude, you give, you know, I'll tell you this. There's a famous guy that we had, it changed our life forever. Famous guy out there, entrepreneur, Dave Meltzer, right? Where he talked about 80-20 rule, where you want to give 80% of value, and in turn, you're going to get 20% Meltzer, back. Right? David Meltzer,
I follow him on Facebook.
Yeah, dude, he did this crazy, at a conference when we were at a Thrive conference with Cole Hatter, and he did this crazy example where he had someone come up. He's like, hey, who here wants this $100 bill, right? Who here wants a $100 bill? Everyone, yeah, whatever. Okay, all I'm asking is I need someone to give me $20. Who here will give me $20? I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't want to give him $20. What are you asking me $20 for, right? Someone ran on there, up, gave him $20, ran on stage. He gave him $100 back. And he's like, why would I do that, right? I just lost $80. No, in reality, he gave 80% of value. He's only expecting 20% back. Mm-hmm. So use that same principle in your life. Like we talked about, it seemed like you did it here. We've done it before. People watching at home, that's the easiest way to get some success, right? If you're at scratch zero, even if you don't have your own business here, right? Try to look for any ways you can get 80% of value or even more than that, right? On any different business, any person, any mentor, right? I mean, it's going to pay off.
Yeah. And if you can't do that, why are you going to start your own business?
Yep. Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense to me. Why would you go and risk? Because if you start your own business, you're going to have to get like hundreds of thousands of dollars in loan, renovate your kitchen, right? Hire staff. Why would you do all that and then fail, right? When you should go test your abilities first with someone else's business for free, risk free to them. It's not like they're paying you anything. So it's not, they're not risking anything.
Yeah. That's I think that's such a big piece of advice, bro, because I feel like now, especially with like the Andrew Tates and all these freaking guys, dude, and like Instagram and Facebook and fucking TikTok, like they like kind of glamorize like starting your own business so hard, so much where a lot of people do think that you do have to start from scratch. But I mean, all three of us here, you know, are like testaments that you don't have to go from zero. Like you can provide a shit ton of value for free for maybe a year, maybe two. And eventually it's going to come back and you're going to be where you wanted to be originally. And maybe even better because now you have a mentor and a relationship with somebody that helped you along the way, dude. So that's like key. Golden nugget.
So that's how you self-develop your way into becoming a entrepreneur, right? But you can also, like what you just said, find a mentor. Just find someone who's already doing it and just learn from them. Yeah. You don't got to go and grow a business out, right? You learn from someone who already grew a business out. Just like when you want to learn how to box, right? Do you go and just randomly box people? Or do you get a boxing coach to teach you how to actually throw a punch first, right?
Yeah. You're not squaring up on the side of the street. Box me right now. No experience.
Yeah, that's so true, dude, because a mentor definitely fucking cuts a curve on learning. With the boxing example, you can sit there on the a corner of the street fighting people, and you're probably not going to learn. Like, it's going to take you 5 years to learn what you could have learned in 1 month at a boxing gym.
Exactly.
Key, dude, on the topic of learning and getting mentors, one of the kind of hacks to go around getting mentors, obviously going to business conferences, right? Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit off camera. What are some of the best conferences you've been to so far in your career?
Mm-hmm. So if I got to be honest, the best event is very biased based on who you are. So if you want to learn real estate, Bigger Pockets is the best event, hands down, in my opinion. But that's the only real estate event I've been to. Okay. But for business, the best I've been to is WealthCon. We talked about it a little. Yep. But I just really like the networking I did and the value I got from there because they don't just focus on real estate. They teach about real estate. They also teach about social media. I learned a lot of my social media stuff from there. Like the first 3 seconds of your video, you got to hook them right away, right? I learned that from WealthCon. And I met my buddy who's a eight-figure entrepreneur from there who owns 11 Dunkin' Donuts, you know? So I got to network really well over there. Rather than when I went to Bigger Pockets, it was a lot of real estate investors that I met only, you know, which it's nice to network with them too. But, you know, I don't know how much benefit you get from meeting people who, you know, has a lot of small multifamilies, you know.
Yeah.
Not to sound transactional, but, you know, you do want to network with people who are
at least in your industry.
Hey, it's cool. Yeah, bro. It's cool you're talking about. You go to these events and you're not only going there to sit there and just kind of listen to someone talk. Really, and I've heard you talk about it on your social media, you're going there to make sure you make the connections to relative to your business, relative to your life, right? That's why you go. So. Yeah. That's cool, bro, to see you kind of got the most out of it. Yeah. And we appreciate you today, bro. Obviously, we know it's a Thursday night. you got tons of people outside, and we've seen people going back and forth, and we know you're a busy guy too, bro. Being the CEO of what you guys got going on here is, I definitely know you got your hands full, man. But before we end today, I want to kind of kick it real quick to our rapid fire section, right? Like our rapid fire questions where we've come up with a couple. I know we, Mark, producer guys behind the camera, have a couple just because your business is so interesting, bro. And it's not only so interesting, but it, like, it's popping, bro. It's cool here.
Thanks,
so,
man.
One of the questions I've always had, bro, is how do you come up with, like, promos in the restaurant industry, and is it different from, like, alternative businesses, you think?
Promos?
Yeah, as far as, like, promos you got going on, because I know there's a lot of people that preach on, you have to do a promo every single month, you have to do this, you have to do, like, you know what I mean? And then there's some people that don't. There's some people that just believe you have a good product, you market it right, and you don't have to do all kinds of promos, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not really an expert in promos, if I'm going to be honest. The only promo I've ever done is, like three free egg rolls, and that's to get their information, their phone, their SMS and email, so you can get them to come back. And I don't know if you want to call that a promo, because that's just kind of like to keep customers engaged and keep them coming back.
Yeah, I would say it's a promo, 100%, bro. It works. Yeah. I mean, you're getting information, you're getting data.
Getting your data, yeah.
I'm not an expert in it, because I don't know how successful that even was, you know. Yeah. We do stamp cards where, like, you buy 10, you get, like, a free plate, you know. Yeah. And that keeps people coming back. Yeah. But I'm not an expert in promos. Yeah. I don't do too many promos, and we've been able to succeed without it, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. One other one we have is, what's, like, the number one piece of advice you can give somebody in a restaurant business right now with the current state of social media?
So it really depends. If they're stuck at social media, okay. Yeah, if they're stuck at six figures, then utilize social media. And just because you utilize it doesn't mean you're doing it right either. Because you can make reels and they suck. They're boring reels and nobody watches it. Yeah. And nobody shares it. So you get no engagement and customers don't come. And you can make reels where you get tons of engagement, but it's too general. You got people from New York watching it. You got people from Florida watching it. You got people from overseas watching it. They're never going to come eat at your restaurant, dude. They're not from Fresno. Yeah. You need to make sure Fresno people watch it, and Fresno people are going to come eat at your restaurant. So you got to use social media, right? Or, you know, because you can't just be like, oh, social media doesn't work. I used it, and it didn't work for me. Dude, well, you didn't execute it right. Yeah, you did the wrong thing.
On the topic of social media, too, the next one is, have you ever thought about using influencers for your restaurant?
Hell yeah. Food influencers are huge. I actually became friends with a food influencer. His name is Good Eats Drew. I don't know if you guys know him. Yeah. But when he made a video for us, we got tons of customers that week. He made it in December. And for the whole week, customers were like, dude, I came here because I saw you guys on Instagram. And I would ask them, hey, what videos did you guys see? And they would pull up Good Eats Drew's video. Mm. And I'm like, holy shit, from just one video? And it was free. He did it for free for me. Now we're really good friends. For free, I made tons of sales. I didn't keep track of the sales, you know, but like tons of customers came in. There's a Hmong food influencer. His name's Silver Young. He came and did some videos for us too. And I'm sure, you know, that helped a lot with traction too. I didn't really get to see the results of it because I wasn't here a lot. Because he made the videos and I was kind of like not here the next few weeks. So I didn't really get to see. But Good Eats drew tons of customers from that.
Banger.
And you should utilize your local influencers. Even if you got to pay them a few $100, it's worth it because you're going to make thousands of dollars in sales. Yep. If you pick the right influencer. Yeah, it's if they have the right crowd. Mm.
That's so true, though. You don't want to get an influencer from New York, kind of like you were saying. Man,
okay, the best example I give is, like, dude, you don't want to get a Fresno OnlyFans influencer, right? And, like, they got a whole bunch of dudes who don't care about food on their follow, they follow her, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they got a whole bunch of dudes from, like, overseas and, like, from across the country who follows her. Yeah. They're not going to come and buy stuff at your restaurant, dude. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the best example I give.
They may love egg rolls, bro. You never know, bro. I mean,
maybe. You might get a few, but you're going to get a better bang for your buck if you get, like, a local food influencer who has 100%. A bunch of local people.
Yeah.
100%. Not to hate on, you know, OnlyFans influencers. Yeah. Because they're great, too. But just not for my niche.
Yeah. 100%, bro. And we appreciate you, bro. And before we end, real quick, we always have a signature, always this question that we always ask before we end. It's kind of like a situational-based question where I want you to put Chu back in young Chu, right? Maybe like 20-year-old Chu, before you knew you were going to be the CEO, before you knew you were going to take the business from where it was all the way to over $1 million, millions of dollars. What's some advice you would give Chu then on letting yourself know everything's going to work out?
Man. I got pretty bad memory, I'm not gonna lie. So I'm trying to think. But I know I wasn't like, you know, we think we're confident, right? But I know I wasn't the most confident guy when it comes to business and finances and success. I had a lot of like anxiety because I was still in college and I hated it. And I'm like, man, if I don't get through college, I'm never going to be successful. I got to get through this. And now that I think back, I'm like, man, I was so stupid, dude. Like, everything's going to work out, you know, if because how driven you were, how motivated you were, you know, you wanted it. You just got to go and get it. I would probably talk to him about, you know, like scarcity mindset, and there's a lot of success to go around. You just got to go looking for it. Right. That's the main thing I would talk to younger Chu about. Cause I was in a very like scarcity mindset too, you know, like, oh, I'm never going to succeed. I'm never going to make it. And I'm not saying I made it now, you know, because I still want more. Yeah, I still want to keep going. That would be the main thing, yeah.
That's okay. All you need right there, bro. And I feel like one thing I would tell younger Chu is that all your hard work's going to pay off and that one day, a couple years down the road, you're going to be able to take your mom out of the kitchen, see your mom more happy, send your mom on vacations like you have. Yeah. And that's just something I would tell, just kind of looking inside out, right? Yeah. Like younger Chu, because that's so cool, bro. Like, it's your story. I know people at home watching this, they were winding back a couple minutes or whatever it is to the very beginning. We talked about your story, bro. Resonated with me a lot, bro. Like the fact that you care so much about your parents, care so much about your family, that you took over the business, bro. Like, you didn't have to do that. And thanks, you ran with it, bro.
Appreciate it. One, I just thought of something. Yeah. It plays into scarcity too. Think bigger, dude. I thought like, oh, if I make six figures, I'm living it. That's good. You know, I thought that was good. Yeah. Now I'm like, dude, like, even if I'm making like eight figures, that's not good enough. I want to be a billionaire by the time I'm like, I said 40, but now I'm thinking more like 35. Yeah, I want to be a billionaire by the time I'm 35.
Yeah, there you go.
Fuck yeah. That's huge.
Oh, heck yeah, bro. So I appreciate you, bro. We know we don't want to take any more of your time. Yep. I know we appreciate you coming on today. And we know popping outside, we're dying to try the food. We've been dying to try it. And if you're at home as well, if you're here in the Central California, Central Valley area, make sure you stop by this spot. It's to die for. Like I said, this is going to be a mouthwatering episode. And real quick, bro, if they're going to come for the first time, what's the number one thing they have to get?
You have to get the egg rolls. Yeah, that's just the thing that everyone comes here for and everyone enjoys. Yeah, egg rolls and pork belly, they're both like neck to neck. Okay. But I always recommend egg rolls, especially because it's cheaper, you know, so they're like, okay, yeah, I'll try it, you know.
Because the
pork belly costs like, I think like $14, right? So they're more like, is it going to be good, right? So I just throw the egg rolls at them first and they're like, oh, shoot. If this is good, let me try the pork belly too.
Okay. So you got to go try the egg rolls. Try the pork belly too, man. Try everything on the menu. Promise you won't regret it. Molly's Kitchen right here in Fresno, California. Appreciate you, Chu, coming on.
Yes, sir.
People are watching at home. They want to find more about you. Where can they find you and where can they find Molly's Kitchen?
So if you just look up Molly's Kitchen, you'll find a website. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Just look up Molly's Kitchen. You can also find me at Chu Yi Vang Official on Instagram. And then Chu Yi Vang on Facebook. And I think I'm also Chu Yi Vang Official on TikTok.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sick. He's the man. Molly's Kitchen is a spot to be as well. And if you're a restaurant, your business, whatever it is, man, this guy drops a lot of game as well. Drops a lot of game on today's pod. And we appreciate you guys at home for always tuning in for another episode. Make sure you like, subscribe, rate us on
Apple and Spotify, baby.
Apple and Spotify, man. Let us know.
SoundCloud.
not SoundCloud. We're not on SoundCloud. Any last things, guys, before we wrap up?
Make sure we subscribe, baby. We'll see you guys in the next episode.
Yes, sir.
Peace.